This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, Sharp Money and Amal Shaw has had a ton of success, of course, circa Survivor. So I know people were bitter as we open up Like, Love, Loathe, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. And I know people were bitter that the Giants come back from 21 down, boys, and end up beating the Cardinals 31-28. Don't cover the 4.5, which is where they closed on the road. However, the number was like, what, 1,300 could have been bounced from Survivor if the Giants had lost at Arizona, Amal?
Yep.
That would have cut the pool basically in half. Would have probably brought us down to, oh, around, I think, 4,500 or something like that.
That was, and we were on, now, Amal's got his own thing going, but we were on the Bills, correct, Dustin Sweetelson?
Yeah, we took the Bills, which were the most used team on Circa Survivor. But here's the thing is, while the Giants were losing, you also had the Broncos. That meant in the late window alone, the Broncos ended up losing. That could have been 2,000 combined right there between those two teams. Instead, you only get the 847 losing from Denver.
By the way, when we're going to get into the Like, Love, and Loathe, this is kind of part of my segment here. I also had Buffalo as well. I mean, they're down 7-0. They outscore the Raiders 38-3 the rest of the way. This Raiders team, man, if they play, their defense would fit right in the Big 12.
How about this? Maybe they're out of it. Jimmy G reunites with Robert Saleh in New York.
I'd tell you right now, I would send a private plane for Jimmy G right now. Jimmy G looks like Joe Montana right now to me.
And Chandler Jones seems happy with ownership there with the Raiders. Anywho, let's continue. Dustin, your face says it all, dog. Like, what the hell was that Twitter rant? Now, let's go Like, Love, Loathe. Yeah. We'll go all three, and I'll start with the like. You've seen the stat dancing around. Daniel Jones, forget being down 21 at the half. Forget the erratic play calling. Daniel Jones was the Giants yesterday.
Yeah.
He was the first player in Giants history. 250 passing yards, 50 rush yards, 2 passing touchdowns, 1 touchdown on the ground. And by the way, he did it all in the second half. One player since 2010, Mike Vick, went 250 through the air, 50 plus on the ground with 2 touchdowns and then 1 rush. The only other person to do it, Daniel Jones. I thought... And again, forget about the market and forget about the contract because he's always going to be compared to the number he got as far as getting paid. I thought Daniel Jones, honestly, I didn't like. I'll save my love for somebody else. I liked what I saw from Daniel Jones, specifically when they needed it most in the second half here, Amal.
I would agree with you completely. And I'll tell you what, he was very impressive. I watched that second half of the Cardinals-Giants game very closely. It was funny. I was sitting there thinking of Dustin when I was watching the game going, yo, man, we might be wrong on this guy. Like, he looked great on some of the throws, Patrick. It wasn't just the mobility, but it was just the accuracy on the throws. I don't know if it was the tying touchdown at 28 or the one that made it 21. Man, he threw an absolute seed in there. I was like, wow. There weren't 5 or 6 quarterbacks outside of him making that play that you would have taken to complete that pass.
Big guy?
Through 6 quarters, it looked like nobody was ever open for the Giants. Against the Cowboys, it felt like Daniel Jones was forced to run a lot because the pocket was really bad. The offensive line was bad. They were without Andrew Thomas, their only good lineman yesterday. And it just felt like guys weren't getting open. All of a sudden, something happened after they went to the locker room at the half, and guys were suddenly open. They brought in the rookie Jalin Hyatt to stretch the field. He made 2 huge catches to start his career. And I think he's a difference maker because they have a lot of good possession guys, but they need that vertical threat. And I got to tell you, as a Daniel Jones defender for a while, saying a lot of things weren't his fault, he made some throws downfield that even I didn't know he was capable of doing. Super accurate, a lot of time in the air, taking some risks, but calculated risks, and he threw a way better deep ball than I imagined. If they can add this vertical element aside from this kind of running side and short passing game, the Giants are a lot more dangerous than I thought going into the locker room yesterday.
He wasn't helped by the coaching. He wasn't helped by the play calling. Even that little pass out in the flat to Saquon, he put it for only Saquon could catch the ball. And obviously we'll find out more today if you guys have heard on Saquon. Go ahead, Dustin.
No, I haven't heard, but what was that in the first half? The only thing I can think of to justify it is they have a short week with San Francisco coming up. And they thought they could run over Arizona with a limited game plan. Halfway through, they realized we got to open it up more. That's the only thing I can think of because it was 2 totally different teams.
Well, that being down 28-7.
Yeah.
Yeah, I listen, I thought Jones was awesome. Honestly, all kidding aside, because he gets clowned nonstop, he was making big-time throws. And again, not necessarily a season-saving half, but we shall see. My like, Daniel Jones. Amal Shaw, you're up.
Just to finish up the point you made, Patrick, no, I would take it one step further. In my opinion, a season-saving 30 minutes of football. Because remember, they didn't score in the first six quarters. You've got the 49ers up in Santa Clara in, 96 hours from the time that game ended? I mean, that's a quick turnaround to have to play such a physical team who's been dominant so far.
Yeah, well put. Yeah. Who's your like?
I'm going to go with Michael Penix, Dylan Gabriel, and Kyle McCord, three starting quarterbacks for Washington, Oklahoma, and Ohio State. A lot of question marks for me with Penix. I know you guys were higher on him than I was coming into the season. Real quickly, Penix is completing 74% of his passes, 1,332 yards, 12 touchdowns, one INT, and it's just the consistency throughout. He's been outstanding. I thought a lot of it was a combination of Washington's receivers, who they played, and Kalen DeBoer, but I also think you have to put Michael Penix into that equation as being a key cog in the success of what we've seen out of Washington, and I think that team is very much alive for the Pac-12. Very quickly, Dylan Gabriel, a ridiculous 83% completion percentage so far this year, 11 touchdowns, one INT, 905 yards, and then Kyle McCord for the Buckeyes so far, 53 for 76 for 70%, six touchdowns, one INT. I just thought all three guys have been a little bit better than I would have anticipated this year.
I would have loved to be on the call this morning when Dustin Sweetelson, I need one like from you, Amal, and he gave him three quarterbacks in college football. I would have loved to hear the conversation. Now, I'll say this just to double down on what Amal just said about Penix. You can have your Ohio States. You can throw in another team. Is there a better wide receiving core than what we've got at Washington?
Because they have a third emerging now.
Well, McMillan, Polk, and Adunzie, to me, as a trio, are probably as good as anybody in college football. I will push back with Wilson and Coleman at Florida State. Those are absolute dudes.
Good one. Good one. Okay. Nice one. Quarterbacks as far as college football, like, you're up, big guy.
Some history was made Sunday when the Falcons were able to beat the Packers at home. And it comes down to one person, and it's not the quarterback. Officially, I can say, according to the Elias Sports Bureau, Desmond Ridder is the worst quarterback in NFL history to begin a season 2-0. And why is that? Because Arthur Smith is an offensive genius. What he is designing with this team, with the most limited quarterback in the league, is remarkable. If they ever get anyone with some talent under center there, this is going to be a dangerous offense to watch week in and week out. Because the fact that they were able to pull off this win, start the year 2-0 with Desmond Ridder dunking his way, 19 of 32 for 237, it's remarkable. He is one of the best offensive minds, not from that Shanahan McVay tree.
Here's the thing about Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw. Just have a private conversation with the guy one time. He's like the cockiest guy on the planet. I freaking love it. I get off the conversation with him. I have an extra pep in my step because I'm like, if this guy's cocky, anyway, he also loves to double down on his arguments. So he's decided that he despises Desmond Ridder. And every show along the way here during the football season on Sharp Money, as you know them all, will include Dustin Sweetelson reminding us, kind of like Blake Snell, reminding us that he loathes Desmond Ridder. Fair?
There's no question about it, but here's the problem, Patrick. He does not loathe Desmond Ridder even 50% about as much as I do. I think this guy's the worst quarterback to play in the NFL.
He is bad. I'll agree with the two of you. Oh my God. Second half, I actually thought he was pretty good, though. To be fair, I thought he was fine.
The thing is, they're scheming things up to use his legs, which I think is great, but these defenses are going to have to learn. Just take away his legs because he can't throw to beat you. That's the simple cure here. You think Desmond Ridder is going to come back against your team? Just drop back, spy him, make sure he doesn't run it past the line of scrimmage. They're running the freaking option multiple times a game. He can't throw to beat you. Just sit back in coverage.
I absolutely love him. Real quick on Arthur Smith, it shouldn't come as a surprise that he's this intelligent. For people that are unaware, his father's Fred Smith, and you go, who is that? He's the man that started Federal Express. I mean, this is a sustained business that's been incredibly successful for a long, long time. Smith just calls the game in an intelligent way, plays to the strengths of what his players and the people and the personnel he has around him.
I'm not a big conspiracy theory guy, but have either of you seen Arthur Smith, the head coach of the Falcons, in the same room as our 21st president, Chester Arthur? Because Chester.
Now that you mentioned it, I've never seen them in the same room, Patrick.
Well, but the reason I bring it up, you know what Chester Arthur, big guy, you know what he invented?
What?
Mutton chops.
Oh.
The big bushy sideburns. Take a look at Arthur Smith. Big ass mutton chops. And again, I'm not saying his favorite president was the 21st, that being Chester Arthur, but Arthur Smith kind of got same vibes. They're 2-0. Bijan, it's almost like they could use him more effectively, or he's about as electric. We saw Drake London get involved yesterday, Amal Shaw, which is important to them. Nice little start here for the Falcons.
No question about it. You mentioned Bijan goes 19 for 124. Drake London, 6 for 67 on a house call. Mack Hollins, that length on the perimeter, 3 for 60 as well. You know, the one thing I'd like to see is a little bit more consistency on getting the ball to these guys on the perimeter, whether it's London, whether it's Mack Hollins, Kyle Pitts. But again, it's not going to happen with my man Desmond Ridder. What are you guys laughing at?
Big guy. You know, I'm just laughing because, yes, I'm aware Chester Arthur died in 1886, so it would be tough for the two of them to be in the same room. I'm just saying, look out for the mutton chops. Go ahead, big
You
guy.
Mentioned mutton. What's this from? Hey, salad's got nothing on this mutton.
Seinfeld. Come on, man.
Get the hell out of here. All right, three quarterbacks from college football. I had Daniel Jones because I stole it from the big guy. And what was your like, Dustin?
Arthur Smith.
The coach of the Atlanta Falcons. When we come back, let's go love here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, can we open up the big guy's mic here? Because Dustin, bet smarter with Juice Reel. You can connect all your betting accounts and history. So this is, and maybe you can help me out with this because I'm brand new to it. You can see stats and betting behavior, analyze data to help you bet smarter. You can download Juice Reel in the App Store today or go to juicereel.com. Remember back in the day, you and I used to talk about we needed one place where everything was kind of centralized. And it looks like, Dustin, Juice Reel is the place.
Well, yeah. What happens is you'll load your betting history into the app, and it's going to analyze it for you, show you kind of where you're doing good, where you're doing bad, and use the analytics to pick your next bets.
Okay. Check it out, juicereel.com. Now, I started the show as we welcome you back. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Again, I mentioned if I started thanking Dustin and Amal, it would take 2 hours. If I then went to John Goulet and Len Mead and Bill A.D. and Stacey McCollum for the last 2 weeks, it would take even more time. So thank you to everybody for all your help. I really do appreciate it. And I will say we heard from one of our fearless leaders today. VSiN is killing it. And not only that, Dustin and I have YouTube TV. Amal, I don't know if you've signed up for it, but it's so efficient. The user, the interface to kind of navigate YouTube TV, the quad boxes they have for football on Saturday, incredible. But you can now check out VSiN on Roku, which is obviously super popular. My father's all over Roku. Samsung TV Plus. And if you want to find all the information, it's DraftKingsNetwork.com. But the algorithm, Dustin, for YouTube TV, when you check it out, like you go to mine, it says ESPN, VSiN, you know, all, like it just literally starts to program everything you want and watch.
I'm generally a person when I make major life decisions, I definitely have some regrets initially where I go, you know what, I might have botched this, give it a few months and see how it goes. I am not looking to go back to cable. What YouTube TV is offering right now is insane, especially on Saturdays and Sundays when I've got the 4 and 5 TVs going with four or five games at a time. It's crazy what I'm able to do on YouTube TV. It's so much easier to watch. This is not a paid endorsement. I have to pay my bill. I pay extra for the sports package, and it's worth it.
I just have a quick question. If you're not a sports person, why would anybody have cable television?
Exactly. But I'm getting all of those sports channels on here. I'm getting my local channels. In fact, I'm getting baseball. I got the Giants game I was watching the other day. I normally would have to try to watch the San Francisco Giants through my MLB app, but it'll be blacked out here in Vegas. I'm able to watch it on YouTube TV.
So we started the show like, love, loathe. I'm going to go love and Sean McVay just to give it away, kind of sell the lead. But I started the show by saying we often wonder, do head coaches and do coaches in general pay attention to the number? Well, Sean McVay, with that field goal late to obviously cover the 7.5 if you had it push on the 7, a 30-23 win for San Francisco, Sean McVay answered that question definitively. Yes, they pay attention to the number, but my love is Sean McVay, fellas, in particular. 2-0 ATS on the year. He's plus 11 ATS-wise on the year. Again, if you just take a step back and look kind of macro at what McVay has done, he's 37. He's been to a Super Bowl and lost. He's been to a Super Bowl and won, the youngest to win a Super Bowl. In six full seasons, he's got 11 wins, 13 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins, 12 wins. His coaching tree, McVay, is already more, I guess you would say, more prevalent and more successful than Bill Belichick. He is, we talked about Poku Noku. I think he had to transfer from Washington to BYU and popping already in the pros with just crazy amounts of catches through 2 weeks as far as a rookie record. Matthew Stafford, Amal Shaw, has looked like he's 28. My love randomly this week is for Sean McVay. I thought this roster, if you just looked at it from a construct, was terrible. And 2 weeks in, he's gone on the road and won at Seattle, hung in there against a very good roster in San Francisco. My love this week, Sean McVay.
Got no qualms with that. I think McVay is a terrific coach. I think he's got the right disposition for today's players. He's done a tremendous job. And let's be real here. I don't think too many people had the Rams going on the road, winning at Seattle, and covering the number against the 49ers. But remember, this game was tight. They had some opportunities in this game, couldn't capitalize on it. Give San Francisco credit. But at the end of the day, McVay's got a far more competitive team than we would have expected coming into the season.
Do you guys have a take on the field goal late?
Yes.
The guy will go to you.
I think I've seen a lot of people outraged about it, and I got to tell you, as a bettor, I think it gives us information that we can use to bet going forward. You know, when you back a Sean McVay team now going forward, that if there's a chance to cover, he's going to do it. And I feel better about doing that, especially in close games, divisional games, whatever it may be, that Sean McVay is the kind of guy that is always going to keep going for it. Now, it was a little weird at the end with the way he handled the final couple minutes, but in the end, he looked to get a cover, and that should matter if you want to bet on players, coaches, and teams.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I think it was actually the right decision, not from a gambling standpoint, just an overall standpoint, because remember, tiebreakers are a factor in determining playoffs if you have several other things in front of you that are tied. Strength of schedule, head-to-head record against common opponents. I know people are not worried about 3 points in the grand scheme of things, but let's just say it came down to it. Why not make that play as opposed to just trying to throw the ball in the end zone, which is probably not going to be completed?
Did you just sneak in and I'm the type of guy right underneath Amal Shaw without him noticing?
100%.
Okay. To be fair. Okay. That's my love, McVay. I mean, and think about his coaching tree so far.
Yeah.
Like, Belichick hasn't been able to produce a head coach, and McVay just keeps on spitting them out. What he's done in just 6 short years has been incredible. Amal Shaw, you're up. Your love for the week.
Just the NFL in general. You know, all of us were on the Bills in that Survivor contest. They win the game easily. I mentioned earlier outscoring the Raiders 38-3 at one point in time in this game, I believe. But to me, or at least the rest of the way, 38-10, whatever it was. But, you know, to me, when I look at it, think about these games. The Bears game, you get the pick six late. The Packers-Falcons game, final field goal there to win the game. Even if the Texans, if they hit the Fairbairn long field goal, it's a one possession game. Seattle-Detroit goes to overtime. Lions coming back. Chargers-Titans goes to overtime. Ravens-Bengals 3-point game. Chiefs-Jaguars came down to a failure to execute, down 17-9 in the red zone on 4th-and-10. Rams game was tight throughout. Giants with an incredible comeback, down 28-7. Commanders game, we get a Hail Mary and a 2-point conversion attempt. How good is the National Football League? I mean, it's unbelievable. In terms of just, you don't have to be a bettor. You don't have to play fantasy football. I've never even played fantasy football. But to me, Patrick, when you're just watching, if you like competitive sports, I don't care what the sport is. If there's 2 minutes to go in a game, and if it's tight and close, I'm going to watch the conclusion of it. And that's exactly what the NFL is every week.
It's funny, and we've got two more games tonight. It's funny you said that for your love, because I wrote down at the top of my list today, a lot to unpack. The NFL consistently delivers. It's unbelievable. If you're sitting there for 10 straight hours yesterday, you're right. The product completely delivered them all. Big guy, you're up. Your love.
My love is a specific conference in college football. And, you know, there's one that we all follow closely that's down. There's one that routinely bores me. And there's another one that I don't ever find as interesting as other people. But the one conference right now that every single one of their teams to me is a fun watch is the Pac-12. The Pac-12, the quarterback play, the offenses, the diverse attacks. I am loving everything I see from the Pac-12 this season. I just, look, you've got Caleb Williams and USC at the top. You know what they're about. It's ultimately make the playoffs or it's a bust this year. You've got Colorado doing what they're doing. Must watch TV, must experience moments in Boulder. Oregon's flying under the radar, but they already have a marquee win under their belt, and they look really good. And they've got a huge one with Colorado this week. Oregon State and DJ look awesome. They beat up on San Diego State. Didn't have to show too much in doing so. Utah super physical. Washington's wide open. I love the Pac-12 right now. It is the most fun conference in college football to watch. It is the one that you should be scheduling your weekend around.
I just want to add one thing to it. I don't think this is a recent development. For me, look, the Big 12 has always been very entertaining for a long time, especially when we saw those high-scoring offenses. You know, you go back several years and then maybe to about a dozen years. But if I'm looking at it from an unbiased perspective, Patrick, you and I are Big 10 homers from that part of the country. If you look at the Pac-12 for a long, long time, it's always never had a consistent team outside of SC. That's why I thought the league has been so good, because you could have a Washington, you could have an Oregon, a Washington State can win the league, Arizona State back in the 90s. There's so many different teams, Stanford with David Shaw. And when you look at it geographically, guys, I don't know if there's a conference that has a more of a juxtaposition. You've got the entertainment capital of the world in Los Angeles, USC and UCLA. You've got a podunk town where you literally, if you go to Pullman and people say there's a hill, turn right. No, don't give me the street. Can I have the street? No, you can't miss the hill. Like, it's unbelievable the difference in terms of the leagues of the schools.
And they're good, too, by the way. Wazoo is really good. Cam Ward is serious. They have this new offensive coordinator from Western Kentucky. They have a defensive head coach who's great at that. I love Washington State right now.
And the best thing about the Pac-12, if you think about it, boys, the way they're set up, they're good for years and years to come. Hey. When we return, let's like, love, let's get to our loathes. And Shane Beamer in Columbia, South Carolina, I'm coming for your ass.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, Sharp Money, as we welcome you back, hour three on a Monday. Of course, you got two Monday Night Football games coming up tonight. In Carolina, New Orleans is in town. Divisional matchup 3. New Orleans laying it on the road, 39.5. Cleveland is at Pittsburgh. Two road teams laying chalk here, laying 2, 38.5. So we close out week 2 tonight, Monday Night Football. Anomalous as far as the totals, right, boys? As we welcome you back, I'm Patrick Maher, of course, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, and I'd like to introduce a good friend, one of the best sports bettors on the planet, that being Steve Fezzik. You can find Fez on Twitter, at Fezzik Sports with 2 Z's and a K. Also, check him out, pregame.com. A great start to the football season for Steve Fezzik. But Fez, as we say hi to you, a bunch of unders in week 1, and then we just started soaring over the totals, looking for the numbers. So far, we're 12-2 to the over as far as totals. NFL week 2, what do you attribute that to?
You know, you always wonder if the NFL doesn't send out a memo whenever there's a really low scoring week that's like, you know, we don't need all these offensive holding calls and maybe we should emphasize more defensive pass interference. Call me a conspiracy guy, but after that really low scoring week 1, there sure was a whole lot more scoring. Now, a big part of it was the weather. Remember, we had so many games on the Eastern Seaboard that were played in rain in Cleveland, and I think that absolutely combined with the lack of preseason threw off the timing of a whole lot of teams. A lot easier to play football on a fast track in Arizona than, say, New York Giants in a driving rainstorm. Yes.
Boys, it's interesting because I mentioned we've got the overs cashing 12-2, And then we've seen two totals tonight, Amal Shaw. New Orleans, Carolina, it's come down a little bit. We're seeing mostly 39.5s on the board. And then Cleveland, Pittsburgh off the opener come down a little bit as well. I'm seeing a couple 38.5s out there.
It doesn't surprise me a little bit by the move in the Saints game, simply because when you look at it, you've got a rookie quarterback making his second career start. We know historically guys first overall, the struggles that they had minus the Derek Carr win going back to this century. And then on top of it, you look at how well the Saints defense has performed last year, carrying over into the first week of the season against the Tennessee Titans. Patrick, they probably gave up 12 points if Mike Vrabel goes for it on fourth down and they don't convert that. So I think this New Orleans team is going to be one that you see until we see them give up points, or their offense show overwhelming ability to be highly scoring, that games in there, they're going to either be bet down, or you're going to see much lower numbers on them.
Fez, I see you chomping. Go ahead and jump in on the totals tonight.
You know, I don't have much on it, other than if we go 12-2 to the over and we're seeing two low totals that aren't getting bet up, it's probably for a good reason. If you bet under, I wouldn't be surprised. If you went 1-1 with a chance at 2-0, I would lean unders. If you can get 20s on the first half, that under 20 is a monster whenever you have a 39 total, because it's so often it's 7-3 with 4 minutes to go in the first half. And you know what? This happened with Atlanta Green Bay. So it was 7-3 almost at the end of the first half, and you needed is that Kim for the kicker for Atlanta had to miss the extra point to keep it under 19.5. So that 20 is such a key number, but I think the 20s are long gone on both games.
Amal, looked like you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, no, the other thing is you mentioned the 20. I think why it's such a crucial factor is if you have a drive that stalls out inside the 35-yard line, let's just be real here. These kickers nowadays are just like machines from inside of 52 yards. If you cross the 37-yard line, you feel like a 54-yard field goal or less is going to be almost automatic. But again, you need to be able to finish that drive off, and you get one of those drives that doesn't get completed, to Steve's point. Now it's an extra possession that requires a field goal to be made to even worst case scenario be a push. And so from a numerical standpoint, Steve knows this extremely well, Patrick. It just gives you such an advantage. If you get now in this game, it's not applicable, but let's say you have a 40.5 total. You get a first half of 20.5. Obviously, ideally, would you want 21, but that's not going to be plausible. 20.5, such a great number. People overlook that. Yeah, on paper, it looks like they're going to go down. They're going to score left, right, and center. Jacksonville and Kansas City. What do we wind up with in that game? 26 points, I think, something ridiculously low. So many times in the NFL, it's different than college, where one play can wipe out a total very quickly.
Fez, let's have a little fun. I haven't seen you in a while. We've done this for years and years together. A day in the life. People love you and your lifestyle, and like, you know, especially during football season where everything turns up to 100. Let's start when you woke up yesterday morning. We'll get to the openers last night and to kind of analyzing the box scores this morning, which you found quite interesting. But let's wake up on Sunday with Fezzik and kind of walk through the day yesterday.
Yeah, so I usually wake up around 7 a.m. and I kind of go into follower mode in terms of I got guys that are researching the props. So my buddy the Hitman's great at it. So he's sending me over various suggested prop bets to play Cortland Sutton under. We lost that one. I think he won like six of his other seven. And so I'm surfing around, and it's hard in Vegas. Patrick, we are so far behind in Las Vegas in terms of putting up props on quarterbacks, skill position players, running backs, wide receivers, and a lot of them just aren't available. And I don't live on the East Coast, where a lot more of those books are fantasy-based, and they put up a lot more product to be able to play. Certainly looking at line movements across the board, I got to be honest, I had a couple playback losers where I had loaded up. For instance, I had played Dallas during the summer -2.5 against the Jets, and I had played a -3, and I had all these Dallas teasers, and I'm like, I'm getting a little too heavy on Dallas. So I see money then coming back on the Jets, and I went ahead and played the Jets, I think, +9, grabbing rogue numbers right before kickoff, pretty much doing that, you know, throughout the day. And once the games start in the morning games, I'm live wagering throughout. And I got to tell you this whole change in format is disastrous, because the latency, I'm not watching the game till I'm literally 60 seconds behind. I've given up betting live other than during TV timeouts. So be aware, you hear all these people talking about, oh, I'm going to bet on what the next play will be. Well, guess what? The next play's already been run, buddy, as has the play after. So good luck building a model where you're trying to get people to bet whether the next free throw or the kick's going to be made, because you're just too far behind.
Could you expound a little bit on the in-game and the live wagering? Because back in the day, you used to have the bunny ears, so you wouldn't have the latency, and you used to talk about focusing on one game in particular when you're in-game betting. Has there been a difference as far as your approach?
Well, ideally, you have somebody at the stadium that's like feeding you what's going on. I'll give an extreme example. I apologize if I'm giving away the store. Ideally, you want somebody who's attending a game in person. They can tell you who's going to get the football to start the game. So think about this. For years, like these experts, like Klucko the Chicken, would tell you whether to bet heads or tails. And it drove me crazy because the coin toss is actually a pretty strong advantage play on a high total game. But who cares what the coin toss says? It's who gets the ball. So whoever wins the coin toss in the NFL almost always defers. The other team starts with the ball. Boom. If you've got about a minute there where if you could bet that team to score first, that team in the first quarter, even that team in the first half, not nearly as strong as the other two, that's a big advantage play bet. And so I'm scrambling oftentimes from 9:56 to 10 a.m. just trying to get down, and it's harder and harder to play bets like that. Just to give you an idea of pulling back the curtain, the things that pros do, and this is why I hear all the time, like, bookmakers are hugging pro bettors and they're all friends and everything. Not in my world. My buddies, they're not in the Sports Betting Hall of Fame, any of them, and all the bookmakers hate them, so they'll never vote them into the Sports Betting Hall of Fame because they're making bets like who's going to score first when they, because they know that the Giants are getting the ball, for instance.
It's a great point. You know, you have certain situations you think, hey, it's going to be advantageous if a team has the ball first. Better odds to be able to go down and score, obviously, than the other side there. It's an excellent point you bring up there. Steve, just want to ask you in terms of that. You mentioned prop plays and some of the other things. Is it always a situation where you're either going to play them early in the week or very, very late? Or what kind of helps you maybe get involved in something Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, as opposed to just Sunday before kickoff or Sunday after a line becomes available?
Well, in terms of bet per minute,
yeah,
the highest amount would be when the openers come up or 2 minutes before the game kicks off, because that's your last kick at the can, your last chance to wager. But in terms of throughout the week, and this isn't well publicized, but it makes a lot of sense. It's like a scavenger hunt, and oftentimes you don't have the clue, so you can't find the gold coin without the clue. And then the coach comes out and says, you know what, point of emphasis, we're really going to go ahead and feed this guy more. And then as soon as that quote's out there, well, of course his rushing total is going to go up. Now, maybe it's a subterfuge. Maybe the coach is lying. But more often than not, you know, you're going to see his rush yards go up from 43 to 51. And whoever's working the hardest on that Thursday morning when that quote comes out is going to get the over 43 and have the best of it in terms of bets. So people approach it, who approach it like a final exam, I'm just going to study all week long. And then Sunday, I've got all I've done all my calculus problems. And now I'm going to go bet everything. Well, what good is that going to do you tonight? Like New Orleans Saints, let's go to that 3.5. If you show me, Fez, I really like the Saints, I lay 3.5, I'd just be like, you're fired. You have no idea what you're doing. It's a Monday night football game that's steamed upward, and now you're going to lay 3.5 and give me the reasons. I don't even care anymore what the reasons are. There's no way you should be laying 3.5. Now, the question is, when it hits 3.5 at select spots, do we play the Panthers? Probably, but that's just pulling back the curtain on stuff. But like this morning, 7 a.m., the circuit went to -3 even money on the Saints. Nothing wrong with that. That was a good bet.
Did you take anything, just curious, like past and present, last night's standalone game, Belichick and McDaniels? Is there something that stood out to you? Because Belichick's been getting crushed by the advanced analytics crowd. Was there something that stood out to you as far as missteps?
Yeah, I think Belichick is... I hate to say this because I always had him rated the best coach, but I think he had the best people working for him, and he would make really good analytics decisions. He was terrible last night. So you score early in the fourth quarter to go down 8, and he chose to kick. I disagree. I would go for 2. It's fine. I don't care. But then there's like 5 minutes left, and he scores again to cut it to 8. And I'm like, well, here we go. I'm certain now he's going to go for 2. Everyone knows you go for 2. I'm not going to bore everyone with the decision tree and why you win 62% of the time. And yet he trots out the kicker and kicks the extra point. And then Chris Collinsworth, who owns like part of an analytics company, what is going on? Then when the Patriots are driving at the end of the game, he says, boy, should they go for 2 in the win if they get in the end zone? It's like, oh, yeah, that's real sharp. Let's go for 2 after the second touchdown. It's completely wrong.
Inside the minds of one of the sharpest professional handicappers on the planet, 2-time Super Contest winner Steve Fezzik continues here on Sharp Money, including takeaways from week 2. We'll get into the bets coming up on Monday Night Football with the doubleheader as well. Steve Fezzik's here, Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You can do it for $19. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Steve Fezzik's here. Of course, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. Week 2 concludes tonight. Two Monday Night Football games. We'll get to those. We'll get to the picks coming up in just a bit. We do appreciate, I will say, as the boys broadcast, sounds like it's getting loud there at the D. The boys broadcast from the D. I have to thank my friend Steve Fezzik. I've seen his house set atop a beautiful mountaintop there in Henderson, outside of Henderson. So the drive over to the D is a long one. We do appreciate you for driving in, Steve. And part of your handicapping process is, what did we pick up from week 2? You kind of look backwards and then move forward. You were talking about the box scores. And this week, the box scores lined up perfectly with the outcomes.
So this is terrible. So I'll use an example of what I'm looking for. If you watch the Colorado State game and you stayed up late. By the way, Colorado had the ball first in the first and second overtimes. I don't know if anyone heard. Did Coach Prime take the ball to start the second overtime? That's a huge mistake. I digress. Colorado State should have won the game. Box score-wise, they were up like 200 yards for most of the game. They clearly dominated for most of the game. And that's what you're looking for, is a phony final score like that. I don't have them. You look at the final scores this week, and they're pretty darn accurate depiction of what actually happened, even to the extent of, like, Tampa Bay dominated the Bears. But they're only going to win by 3, and I was going to say, oh, that's a phony final that landed on the number. Yeah. Nope, pick 6. Tampa should have won by 10, and they did win by 10. I think the one maybe that stood out was Atlanta only won by 1, didn't cover, and they did dominate the overall yardage by 200-plus yards. So probably, you know, if anything, even though they don't cover, we would upgrade Atlanta for that performance, I believe. But normally I have 4 games where I'm like, well, this final score had nothing to do with what happened in the field. And that wasn't the case this week in the NFL.
When you look,
did you have a take on McVay? I'm sorry,
no,
Amal.
Please.
Just
go ahead.
Wanted to ask about one of the big talking points coming out of that 49ers-Rams game, Steve Fezzik, was McVay kicking the field goal as time expired. Obviously, a winner if he had 7.5, a push on the 7. Did you have a take on McVay kicking it there, Steve?
It's correct to do so. If you have a 0.0001% chance of winning doing something, and you have a 0% of not doing it, you should always do it. So I get it. There's like 4 seconds left and clock expired. But the point is that there were 6 seconds left. Then you kick the field goal. There's 2 seconds left. Somehow you recover an onside kick. It's not going to happen, but it could happen. You know, so, I mean, mathematically, he has to be thinking the entire drive. As soon as we get in field goal range, we kick the field goal, we onside kick, and we Hail Mary. And he stayed true to that. And hey, it doesn't hurt you on playoffs. I know it's like the 7th tiebreaker points, yeah, point differential. There's no disadvantage to do it. And it's not like the 49ers are going to be like, I can't believe you kicked a field goal on us. I'll go back to Sam Weich back in the 80s, the Bengals coach. One time he beat the Houston Oilers 61-7. This is the opposite now. They asked him, he kicked a field goal with 3 seconds left. He said, why did you do that against the Oilers? He responded, I didn't think we had time to get it into the end zone.
I remember that game vividly. But, you know, you mentioned it. That's what I was talking about earlier. I said, Steve, people are looking at it from a betting standpoint. That was the first thing I brought up. Is actually, as a tiebreaker, the playoff procedure is one of the points that has to be taken into consideration. I want to ask you, in terms of adjustments on teams, I love the point you brought up for maybe people that may not be as well-versed on what's a legitimate score as opposed to a phony score. The Colorado State-Colorado game is a perfect example of it. CSU dominated minus all the late hits that they had in that game. But when you make an adjustment potentially on a power rating, what is kind of like your norm that you might adjust the team, and what is the largest upgrade or downgrade you can recall ever having on a team or two?
Sure. You know, it's a great question. Obviously, like a quarterback injury can be part of it. So
exactly.
Cincinnati's going to take, you know, it's going to dive bomb because of poor performance with the punt return touchdown and Burrow being hurt, of course. But usually week 1, week 2, even if a team's terrible, if they have stability from last year's team, 1 point adjustment. Even if they're absolutely awful, but if there's not stability. So look at Carolina. We don't know how good Young will be. Yeah. So I'm willing to make more aggressive changes in my power ratings up to 1.5. Just eyeballing it, though, I did lower the Jets 1.5 because I think that the word is out now. I know that nice touchdown to Garrett Wilson, but aside from that, you know, terrible quarterbacking. And I think that unless they can get a quarterback, the whole locker room is going to divide offense versus defense. But I only raised the Cowboys 1 point. So that's an example where I think the Jets, until they get a quarterback, are going to be a downbound train. And I don't want to be betting on these guys. And the market agrees with me because now I see that the Jets, despite the media guys want to debate, are they still a contender, yeah, you know, without Aaron Rodgers? Contender? They're catching 3 at home against New England. This team's going to win 6 games. Come on.
Steve, I'm going to throw a random matchup from yesterday. You can go ahead and give me your notes. You can tell me the adjustment of either team as far as your power ratings, just to give a better an idea of what a professional handicapper like yourself takes from a matchup. Let's start in Tennessee. The Chargers losers in overtime, 27-24.
Yeah, Chargers are going to charger. Dead even game. 342 to 341 yards. It doesn't get much closer than that. I lowered the Chargers by 0.5. I raised the Titans by 0.5. Not because I think the Titans should have won, but I think it was a dead even game. And the fact that, you know, that spread was, you know, where it was, with the Chargers being the clear cut, you know, 2.5 to 3 point favorites. I thought it was a worthy of an upgrade. Tiny for the Titans, lower the Chargers.
Okay. A shootout in the D, Seattle. 37-31 winner over the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, that was a wild game back and forth. You know, Seattle, I did not actually adjust at all. Detroit's won the yards per play, 6.5 to 5.9. Warning, danger, math. They won the yardage. So I thought it was more about the 0-3 turnover differential, Patrick, for your Detroit Lions being why they lost the game than getting outplayed.
Divisional matchup. Baltimore, a winner in Cincinnati. 27-24, Steve.
So I raised Baltimore by 0.5. I don't want to raise them more than that because they just keep getting more and more injured. I lowered the Bengals by 1. Now that doesn't even account for the Burrow injury. I think the fact that the Bengals only stayed in the game because of the punt return, this actually was a little bit of a phony final. I take that back. Baltimore really should have won this game by 10. If I look at the statistics, the Bengals could be in some real, real trouble this year.
Okay, Steve, the Giants end up coming back down 21 at the half. I want to get into the game and how you adjusted the Giants in Arizona as well. But first, some breaking news here on Sharp Money. Looks like the Schultz Report is reporting Giants running back Saquon Barkley is expected to miss 2 to 3 weeks with a sprained right ankle. So there's the news on Barkley. The Giants, a 31-28 winner over Arizona, Steve.
So the stats-wise say the final score was accurate, but obviously with the Giants down the 28-7. And by the way, kudos, in a week where a lot of teams made the wrong decision to go for two, Arizona was up 19 in that game, and they went for two up 19. How sharp was that? That's what got them to overtime. So a good decision by them. I raised Arizona a half. I lowered the Giants by a half because the stats are a little bit phony because the Giants – Arizona got too conservative, and the Giants got lots of offense down big, and they did pull it out. But then you lower the Giants another one for Barkley being out, so now you have to lower them 1.5.
Mr. Shaw, reaction. Saquon Barkley looks like he's going to be sitting for 2 to 3 weeks. You know what, Amal? I think that's probably good news. The reaction from Barkley on the sideline kind of looked like he's used to big-time injuries. You thought it might be a little bit more dire.
I did. When he slammed his helmet after the injury, by the way, I don't know if you guys saw the play, but, man, you could tell he got roughed up on the play. I wasn't expecting it to be an ankle injury. Thought it might have been something else, but this is a big blow. Now you go to San Francisco. I thought this is why the Giants had to win this game, Patrick, against the Cardinals. It's going to be a really tough spot against San Francisco on the road. They're going to stay out west, head north to Santa Clara. But this is not an easy schedule when you look at it. Then you have the Seahawks coming in on Monday Night Football, which is good because you've got the Thursday to the Monday wraparound there. So that gives you an extended amount of 4 days plus the regular 7. So good spot there. And Miami Dolphins are trending well. You're at the Dolphins at the Buffalo Bills on a Sunday Night Football. So that first 6 weeks of the season, you're probably going to lose these games with Saquon Barkley. Now it almost feels like a foregone conclusion to a certain extent, but the Giants could still have them in time to make a good push.
Fez, you got a minute. Take us the break with Kansas City and Jacksonville. Kansas City, a 17-9 winner on the road. Go ahead, Steve.
Boy, Jacksonville looks like a paper tiger until they get their O-line back together. I know they've got their best lineman suspended for four games, and they held Kansas City to 17. So they played very well defensively and just couldn't muster any offense. Makes you wonder about them being a paper tiger and a phony contender. I would say like Detroit and Jacksonville were like the two hot teams that we're not so hot on anymore after that game. By the way, I do have Kansas City moving up in my power ratings, tied with Dallas. 49ers, my best team right now in the NFL.
The best in the business. You literally throw a game at him and he's ready to go off the top of mind. That's Steve Fezzik, professional handicapper. And when we return, you've waited for it all show. We'll dive into Steve's head as far as the two matchups on Monday night coming up. It is Sharp Money.